Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
That's right, Dr. Dobson. And friend, thanks to generous listeners like you, Family Talk can reach more and more listeners with practical help and encouragement. To support Family Talk with your best gift, go online to drjamesdobson.org or call 877-732-6825.
Today on Family Talk.
You're listening to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh, sitting in for Dr. Dobson on this episode, and today's guest is Dr. David Jeremiah. He is the founder of Turning Point, a radio and television ministry that has reached millions of listeners and viewers worldwide with the good news of Jesus Christ. Dr. Jeremiah is also an accomplished author and speaker and serves as the senior pastor of Shadow Mountain Community Church in Southern California. He received his undergraduate and Doctor of Divinity degrees from Cedarville University and holds a master's in theology from Dallas Theological Seminary. Dr. Jeremiah and his wife Donna have 4 children and 12 grandchildren. Today you'll hear a speech Dr. Jeremiah gave a number of years ago on why parents must give their children attention and why they must prioritize their children's needs above their own. Here now is part one of The Importance of Encouraging Your Children on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
I love children. I have 4 of them. The last one this year just went to college. And so we're dealing with the fact that there's not as much activity around our house as there used to be. Over the years, the Lord has encouraged me greatly with the lessons my children have taught me and with the opportunity to share the truths of the Word of God. And one of the things I love about kids is that, well, they're their own source of humor. Have you noticed that? If you take good notes on kids, you'll never, ever be out of a laugh. And over the years, I've collected these things that kids have said. I'm a pastor, as you know, and I happen to be a Baptist preacher. And in our churches, as many of you know, when we baptize people, we get it all done. I mean, we do the whole thing. And a little girl had been to a Baptist church one night, and she had never seen a baptismal service before, and she was so taken by this. The next night, her mother heard the water running in the bathtub upstairs, and she went up, and this little girl had all her doll babies lined up next to the tub. And the best she could remember, she took the first little baby and put it in the water, and she said, "I baptize you in the name of the Father and the Son, and in the hole you go." That's what she thought she had heard the night before. I'm not going to fool around with you too long, but I want to tell you that it's great to be back in the Midwest because I grew up here. I pastored a church in Fort Wayne, Indiana for 12 years. I'm really a Hoosier at heart. My sister, Dr. Mary Alice Jeremiah, was the girls' basketball coach at Indiana University for about 7 years, and so we have deep roots here in the Midwest. And one of my favorite memories of growing up here in Ohio and then in Indiana were the early vacations we took as a family. And in California, it's hard to believe that there ever was a place where everything wasn't a freeway, but when we went on vacation in our station wagon, all 4 of us kids packed into that thing, I managed to maintain my sanity in context with my brothers and sisters by watching for the Burma Shave signs along the road, and I remember those. In fact, last year, my oldest daughter gave me a precious gift for Christmas. It was a book that had every single Burma Shave sign that ever been created in the book, and it's a great treasure. And I used to copy those things down. I kind of started collecting them. I think that's how I got into this craziness that has followed me around most of my life. And as I grew older and got more mature, I graduated from Burma Shave signs and started to collect epitaphs. And I don't know if you have ever discovered the weird things people put on their tombstones, but it is a whole science in itself. For instance, my favorite tombstone epitaph, and it's truly on a tombstone in New England, goes like this. "Here lies the body of old man Pease, buried neath the flowers and trees. But Pease ain't here, just the pod. Pease shelled out and went to God." Isn't that great? Now, I hope you listened carefully because I told that in a seminar not long ago, and a lady came up to me. She said, "You know, I heard you tell that a couple years ago." And she said, I was so excited, I wanted to go home and tell it to the ladies' missionary group, but she said, I messed it up. And she said, I got in a lot of trouble. I said, dear, what'd you do? She said, well, the way it came out was like this. Here lies the body of old man Pease, buried beneath the flowers and trees, but Pease ain't here, just the shell. And she said, immediately, I knew I was in trouble. So I hope you wrote it down correctly. I'm glad you're awake and we're here together. And I want to talk to you about one of the most important things that I know about in all of life, and that is being a cheerleader for our families. Happened around noon on Mother's Day, according to a national news report, 27-year-old Michael Murray decided to take his two children to the medical center in Massachusetts where their mother was on duty as a surgical nurse. You see, the family wanted to drop off some Mother's Day presents. They had a gold necklace with the words number one mom and a single rose. And with their mission accomplished, the father and his two children made their way back to the darkened indoor garage where the car had been parked. And Murray gently set the infant seat and three-month-old Matthew on the sunroof of the car, turned his attention to buckling Matthew's 20-month-old sister into her seat, and without thinking further, Murray slid into the driver's seat and drove off, forgetting that Matthew was still on the roof. He moved slowly from the darkened garage into the bright sunlight, drove through the busy streets toward Interstate 290, and despite heavy traffic, nobody beeped or waved to warn him that anything was wrong. Pulling into the expressway that cuts through the city, the driver accelerated to 50 miles per hour, and then he heard it, a scraping on the roof of his car as the tiny seat with Matthew strapped in the seat began to slide. He said, I looked to where Matthew should have been in the car, and then in the rearview mirror, I saw him sliding down the highway in his infant seat. And that's where he landed, in the middle of the interstate, in the path of the oncoming traffic. And if you don't leave before this workshop is over, I'll tell you what happened to him. But I want to ask you this question. Have you ever done anything like that? Have you ever forgotten your kids and left them at church? Have you ever thought they were someplace and realized that they told you they were somewhere else? Well, I've done that many times. As a pastor, I've been at the dinner table on Sunday, and all of a sudden we look around and there's a missing person, and somebody has to get in the car and go back to the church because we forgot someone. But you know, I've never put any one of my kids on top of my car, or as far as I know, put them into harm's way. But I need to tell you, men and women, that in the early days of my ministry, I was on a path toward neglect big time that would have done emotionally as much damage as what could have happened to that young child. You see, I was here in Fort Wayne, Indiana, starting a church. I had seven families, and we were committed to the fact that we were going to make this a great place for God. Looking back on it now, I think my motives were relatively pure, but perhaps I was just caught up in not wanting to fail, like many of us can be. We started the church, and I began to visit and knock on doors, and I was the gross national product of the church. I did everything. And about that time, God gave us our first little girl. We adopted Jan, and a few months later, 13 months later, David came along, so we had two little children. And it seemed like every night I was out knocking on doors. On Saturday, I was out visiting, and I remember vividly this question from my wife. Are you going to be gone again tonight? And I would answer usually with sort of a disgust. What do you mean, am I going to be gone again tonight? Of course, I mean, if I don't do it, it's not going to get done. I've got to go do this. And she would just kind of look sad. And then one day she called me into the kitchen and she said, honey, we have to have a talk. And I never will forget that talk because it was the beginning of a new understanding in my life, and I've not recovered from it since. She sat me down at the table, and you'd have to understand how quiet and gracious a woman my wife is and how unordinary this would be. She said, you know, I've sensed every time we've had this conversation about you being gone all the time that it's an irritation to you. She says, I've been talking to the Lord about this, and she said, I want to tell you something. I'm never going to ask you that question again, but I just want to tell you one thing. She said, honey, you're the priest in this family, and you're responsible for what happens to all of us, and someday you're going to have to talk to the Lord about that, and I'm just going to leave this thing between you and him, and whatever you think he wants you to do, you do. Gotcha. And for the first time, I begin to realize that I did have a responsibility to my family. And in spite of the fact that I was pastoring a church that had a tremendous opportunity to grow and be a dynamic force for God, I was on a path toward neglect big time until that conversation. And as I've moved through my life and watched young executives and a lot of pastors and people in ministry, I have discovered over and over again that the experience of my life has been the experience of many of theirs. Unfortunately, perhaps they don't have a wife or a friend who can confront them in the way I was confronted, and so many of them continue that way. And that's why so often we hear, especially among ministry families, that children become angry and rebellious because they're always in competition. And how can you win if you're in competition with God? So I want to tell you some of the things God has been teaching me over the years about how to encourage our children. I believe there are four things we need to do. First of all, if we're going to encourage our children, we're going to do it through focused attention. The one thing that most affects the families and most discourages individual kids is the lack of focused attention on children. How many of you know it's possible to be home and not be home? How many of you know you can come out of a day that's filled with stress, walk home, and you got kids all around, some little and some teenagers, and you can be in the setting surrounded by your family and not really even be aware that you're there or that they are there? Good people, godly people, often very busy people, allow their children to grow up without taking the time with each child. And so the children come and go without any sense of who they belong to or without any sense of encouragement from home. Shortly after my confrontation with Donna, as I began to process all of the responsibilities I had and the responsibilities I had in the home, I'd started to develop a set of priorities. And I want to tell you how my priorities work. And I've shared this with my church, and they know that, and they watch it in operation. Here they are, and they're simple. Number one, I'm a person, so I have a relationship with God. That's number one. Number two, I'm a partner, and I have a relationship with my wife. That's number two. Then I'm a parent, and I have a relationship and a responsibility to my children. That's number three. And then I'm a pastor, and I have a responsibility to my church, and that's number four. You know what? I pastor a church that revels in this truth that they are number four on their pastor's priority list. Because if we're going to be effective in ministry, if we're going to be effective in anything we do, if our priorities do not reflect the priorities of the Word of God, then we can't succeed. And over again, we hear the story of ministry people who've done great things in their career, but their families have paid the price. And I made the decision early on that my children were going to have a very high priority in my life. And I'll tell you what, friends, it's tested almost every day. I was in my office not long ago, and on our campus, we have a college and some other things there, and there's an administration building. My office is up on the second floor, and there's a reception area down below. And when people come to have an appointment or anything, they come into the reception area, and then they'll call up to the offices and tell the secretaries up there who they've come to see. One afternoon, I was getting ready to leave, and the phone rang, and my secretary, Glenda, said, there's a man downstairs who's in big trouble, and he demands to see you right now. I said, well, Glenda, you know I can't see him now. She said, well, what'd I tell him? I said, just tell him I have an appointment. There's five other guys up here he can talk to, but I can't talk to him now. Well, I heard her struggling with this on the phone, and unfortunately for me to get to my car, I had to go down the elevator and walk through the lobby. Well, this was a bold guy, and when he saw me, he walked right up to me, and I've never had this happen before. He got right in my face, and he said, where are you going? I said, well, if you must know, I'm going to Claremont to see Daniel play basketball. He said, "What? You're going to a basketball game and my family's falling apart, my life's falling apart? What kind of a person are you?" I said, "Well, let me tell you something. And I never really thought about this before. God just kind of put this in my head, and I'm not into immediate revelation. I find studying is better, but I learned that sometimes God really can talk to you." And in that moment, this is what I said to him, and I'll never forget that answer. I said, "Sir, there are 5 guys upstairs who can talk to you, but my son's only got 1 father, and I'm gone." And I left. He wasn't a happy camper. Come to think of it, I don't believe I've ever seen him again. But you know what? I've never regretted that, because over and over again, we will be put into situations where we have got to make some decisions in favor of our children. Now, you don't have to do that all the time. And I know some of you guys are sitting back there thinking, "Well, you know, if I do that, I'm out of work." Obviously, you can't just stop everything you do. And sometimes those of us who are in ministry, we have a little more control over our schedule. But what I'm learning is this, that just every once in a while, we need to do something that says to our kids, "I'll say no to something that's important to me so I can say yes to something that's important to you." One of the things Don and I enjoy doing every year is going to the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. It used to be held in Washington every year. Now they kind of move it around. In fact, we were here last year. And we always kind of look at that convention as our midwinter break to get away from everything. And this particular year, we were going to New York City, and I was going to preach at the Calvary Baptist Church, and then we're going on to Washington. And on Friday night before the weekend, we went to my son David's basketball game, and they were playing Lincoln High School. And about halfway through the third quarter, David came down with a rebound and stepped on a guy's shoe, and he flopped his ankle, and I mean, it just exploded like that. The coach came and got us in the middle of the fourth quarter. He said, "You need to take David home. He's in a lot of pain. This ankle is really swollen up." So we took him home. How many of you know that whenever you got something planned that you're going to do, one of them always gets hurt? How many of you know that? It just happens all the time. And so we got home and we iced it down and it looked a little better. And we said, "Well, should we go?" And he said, "Dad, we'll be fine. I'll go see the team doctor." And so we went on to New York City, and I'll never forget this. We had finished our meetings on Sunday, and we called home, and I heard Donna talking to David, and I could tell something wasn't going too well. And I got on the phone, and he told me that what happened was he went to a doctor who wasn't a sports medical person, and they put his ankle in a cast, and they told him his season was finished. And he was brokenhearted, because he was like 3rd in the county in scoring, and he was having a great year. And I said on the phone, I said, "Do you want us to come home?" And it got real quiet. He didn't say anything. I said, "David, we'll be home." So we aborted our trip, got a ticket, and we went home. We got home, and I called my sister, who was then at Cal State Fullerton, and she said, "He put his ankle in a cast?" I said, "Yes." She said, "What kind of doctor is this?" And she told me to take him to the sports clinic. I did. They took the cast off. They did therapy on his ankle. This was now Tuesday. He played on Friday and scored 27 points. I'll never forget that. Now, you would have thought, after all that, you'd have come home after the ball game and he'd be waiting. Maybe a banner up there saying, "Dad, it's great that you came home for me when I needed you." It didn't happen. But Father's Day that year, at the bottom of the card, scrawled in his language was, "Thanks for coming home when I needed you." Do you know what? A little episode like that tells your kids that they are important enough for you to put something that you want to do on hold. And you know what I'm learning now? You only have a few years to play that game. And pretty soon, they're out of there. They need our focused attention. They need to know that we know who they are and that we're going to be there for them. Let me tell you one other story that's a very favorite story of mine. When I started programming my life in favor of my wife and my children, I'd get to my secretary and we'd take my book, my schedule book, and we'd put all the games right in the schedule. Now with computer calendars, you know, I got little footballs in there and little basketballs in. I mean, it's really a beautiful thing. And I pretty much had this scoped out that I wouldn't take any meetings until basketball season was over. And when David was a junior in high school, I didn't think they were going to be very good. So I scheduled some stuff during the playoffs. You know, I figured, you know, they're not even going to make the playoffs, so I can go. So I scheduled a meeting at Arrowhead Springs to preach to 400 women who were Bible study leaders. And you know what? That team started to get better. And about halfway through the season, they kind of hit their stride and they got in the playoffs and they kept winning, they kept winning. And all of a sudden, I'm looking at this mess. I'm scheduled to be at Arrowhead Springs Thursday, Friday, Saturday. They have just won the semifinals and they're playing in the sports arena on Saturday morning in San Diego, and I'm in Arrowhead Springs. So I went to my secretary and I said, I want you to call those people and tell them I can't be there on Saturday. She said, why me? I said, that's what secretaries do. That's why we have you. And so she called and she said, I think it's okay. But I went up there to speak. And I remember walking into the hotel at Arrowhead Springs and a lady came up to me. And the first thing she said to me was, I'm so glad you're not going to stay for Saturday. Now that kind of hit me strange because this woman had never heard me speak and here she always was already rejoicing that I was cutting my trip short. And then she said this to me. She said, our organization is financed by our executive husbands. And she said, it's just really encouraging to see a father making a decision in favor of his family. I went home on Friday night, but before I did, I was preaching in that group on Friday morning, and right in the middle of I was teaching the life of David. A lady jumped up and she ran out of the room and she was crying. Now, those of you who speak, you know, if you're in the middle of something, please don't do that to me today. I mean, and somebody gets up and they leave, you start rewinding what you just said and playing it back again so you can decide whether you've offended them. And I went to the leader of the group and I said, did I say something that offended this woman? She says, let me find out. And this is what she told me. She said, no, you didn't say a word, except she heard that you were leaving and why you were leaving. And while she was sitting there, she was overwhelmed because her daughter was playing in the state championship in Colorado. And she got under conviction and she got up and went and packed her stuff and flew home. And she said, Dr. Jeremiah, I'm not really sure if we can ever afford to have you come back again. Well, all I'm trying to say is this. Somewhere along the way, our kids need to know that we know who they are, what their issues are, and we're going to put something we might do on hold so that we can focus on them.
You are listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, and we've just heard a fascinating presentation by Dr. David Jeremiah on the significance of building up our children. I'm Roger Marsh. If you'd like to learn more about Dr. Jeremiah's ministry, Turning Point, you can head over to today's broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. While you're on our website, you can also take advantage of the various tools and helpful materials we have there as well. Simply go to drjamesdobson.org and click on the Resources tab. You can skim through our library of CDs, DVDs, books, downloads, and so much more on topics that you are facing in the relationships you have with your loved ones. You'll find all of these valuable materials under the Resources tab at drjamesdobson.org. Thanks so much for joining us today. We truly appreciate your prayers and your generous financial support. Be sure to come back again next time to hear the conclusion of Dr. David Jeremiah's presentation right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks for listening.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Here's Dr. James Dobson with Family Talk.
Have you noticed that laughter is the key to surviving the special stresses of the child-rearing years? It's true. Almost every day, I hear from mothers who share the most wonderful stories with me about their kids. One of my favorites came from the mother of two small children, and this is what she wrote. Dear Dr. Dobson, a few months ago, I was making several phone calls in my family room where my 3-year-old daughter, Adrian, and my 5-month-old son, Nathan, were playing quietly. Now, Nathan loves Adrian, who's been learning how to mother him gently since the time of his birth. I suddenly realized that the children were no longer in view. Down the hall and around the corner, I found the children playing cheerfully in Adrian's bedroom. Relieved and upset, I shouted, Adrian, you know you're not allowed to carry Nathan. He's too little and you could hurt him if he fell. Startled, she answered, I didn't, Mommy. Well, knowing that he couldn't crawl, I suspiciously demanded, well, then how'd he get all the way into your room? Confident of my approval for her obedience, she said with a smile, I rolled him. The kid's a little dizzy, but he's okay. Parents like this mother of Adrian and Nathan, who can see the delightful side of children, also tend to cope better with the difficulties. I hope you'll never, never get too busy to smile.
Hear more at drjamesdobson.org. Hello, everyone. Roger Marsh here for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. The news comes in all shapes, sizes, and formats these days, but how do you cut through all the noise and get to the heart of the matters that affect your family? Well, come to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk and sign up for Dr. Dobson's monthly newsletter. You'll find clarity on tough issues, encouragement for daily life, and trusted principles to help you build strong, healthy, and connected families. Go to drjamesdobson.org and sign up today. That's drjamesdobson.org.
Hi, Dr. Tim Clinton for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Hey, right now, grab your cell phone, go to your app store, and click on the Dr. James Dobson Family Talk app. Download it right now, and you can start listening anywhere at any time. 24/7, 365.